Welcome to Higher Education and Workforce Development Budget Division. Will now be in order. Today's date is Tuesday, March 3rd. So we are fortunate to have Senator Cohen with us today to present his bill. And Senator Cohen, I just want you to know in solidarity, not everybody noticed, but I wonder if you have noticed that I am wearing the university's colors.
Madam Chair, let me check with the president.
The president noticed.
You know, I shouldn't say this because this is dead serious and I'm dead serious. But let me just indicate to members why we've put this legislation together, why we'd like to present it. I do have to begin with a little bit, if President Taylor will allow me, just a small reference. The last time I saw President Kaler was a different kind of night for the university. He invited me quite graciously to attend I believe it was a Gopher basketball game. And they were playing a school called Northwestern University, which is where I went to college. And so I'm the biggest fan of the University of Minnesota, with maybe the exception of football games. So, to a lesser extent, basketball games. But and by the way, Northwestern won. But separate from that, the reason I would like to present this to members of the committee, Senate File 1195, is my position, and obviously I've been in the legislature for a number of years. I've had the pleasure of serving on this division, not currently. But I think without question, in a mid-sized state like Minnesota, the land-grant research university, to my way of thinking, is without question the single most important institution, public, private, whatever your definition is, in the state. Might be a little bit different in the state of California, where you have a significant research public university, but you have Silicon Valley, you've got L.A., you've got a huge state with a number of economic centers, academic centers. But I think when you have a state like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Washington State, Indiana, particularly the states of mid-size, and for our purposes, the state of Minnesota, there is nothing more important than the University of Minnesota, number one. Number two, I think that we have done a tremendous disservice to higher education over the last 10 to 15 years. And this comment is not directed on a partisan basis. This is not to suggest, well, you know, we had Governor Plenty as governor and he didn't put enough money into higher education. I will tell you, as somebody who chaired the Finance Committee during the 8 years Governor Plenty was in office, that the choices we had were not palatable choices. And I would like to think that, you know, if I was governor during that time, maybe we would have done better by the university. I think the reality is that the legislature has underserved the University of Minnesota in the last number of years for a variety of reasons, and not the least of which is economic circumstances and budget circumstances beyond the control of either any individual in the state or party. Having said that, there have been some negative consequences. We obviously have watched a significant increase in tuition at the university. We've watched a diminishment of segments of the university, most notably the medical school. And I know members have already heard from Dean Jackson and his concerns. But what I wanted to do was to present a unified university bill that would talk about the university's base request, the university's health request, the university's medical school request, put everything in a single context. And I recognize that when we set targets for the various divisions, including this one, I'll sit down certainly with the chair. We'll talk about the interests of the division, what's important within the division, what's important relative to the chair's concerns, and we would arguably put together a number that might be perfectly acceptable. But we wanted to at least take an opportunity to make it very, very clear to members of this division, because this is obviously where it starts, as to the importance of the university. And I honestly believe the rise or fall of Minnesota, and this isn't meant to be a discussion of the university was actually chartered a couple of years before the state became, the state of Minnesota. As much as I like history, that's irrelevant to this particular conversation. But what's important is that if we continue to nickel dime and gradually diminish the University of Minnesota, we find ourselves in a significantly worse position as a state. Whether you look at the economic development generated by the University of Minnesota over the years, if you look at what we expect from its graduate schools, if we look at what we expect in terms of not simply a workforce development, but the education of the state of Minnesota. And I made the kidding reference at the outset of university athletics, and to be fair, I don't diminish that. There is an importance to so many people in the state and a loyalty of what happens with Gopher Athletics. But the university's main mission and most important mission is to provide that broad-based quality education at all levels to as wide a range of students from the state of Minnesota as best we can. And Madam Chair, I know you have what we consider a companion bill relative to the state grant program. Because I think this year, particularly with our report last week, with a significant budget surplus, to undercut the University of Minnesota this year will send a message, and I don't know if shockwaves would be quite the right phrase, but shockwaves throughout the university that if in this year, with where we are with the budget and doing it reasonably and responsibly, we can't move the university forward, I suggest negative consequences for the state. I'll use one quick example because Senator Clausen is sitting here. I think Senator Clausen's legislation relative to loan forgiveness to provide more medical services in rural Minnesota is a great idea. And I hope that this division will be able to fund some, if not all, of what Senator Clausen is presenting to the state Senate. But if we find the medical school continues to not be able to hold quality faculty and quality researchers, then that medical care in the future we present to rural Minnesota is going to be second-class medical care. And I won't suggest what's the point then relative to Senator Clausen's proposal, but I will suggest that we get a lesser quality of medical care. And again, not just in rural Minnesota, but throughout the state. Obviously, when we talk about the medical school, and Dean Jackson can do this much better than I, there is something a little bit personal involved, I want to be honest with members of the committee. At my parents' and grandparents' generation, there are a host of graduates from the University of Minnesota Medical School. There must be, in the variety of cousins and great uncles and whatever, I don't know, 20, 25 graduates from the medical school. I'm somebody who kind of went the wrong direction and found my way to a law school, but some of those relatives who are still around, forgive me. But the medical school is just one example of what has been so special about the University of Minnesota to this state. And I applaud both President Kennedy and Dean Jackson. Keep in mind, Dean Jackson, you've had the chance to listen to him. Let me make my editorial comment. Here's a fellow who shows up from Johns Hopkins, not exactly a third-rate medical institution. From, you know, possibly, you can make the argument, the finest academic health institution in the country. Yet he's willing to come to Minnesota to reestablish the University of Minnesota Medical School. And that's an important component of what the university is requesting. Again, you've had a chance to hear from him before. So I want to kind of lay that predicate. I hope we can be successful as we set targets. I hope this division will pay close attention. This is not in any way to be dismissive of the MNSCU system, which has an equally important role in the state, a different role, but an equally important role. My effort today is to talk about the University of Minnesota. So that's my little editorial comment. And I know relative to the bill itself, we have the chance to listen to President Kaler, And also, I think Mr. Polinsky from Land O'Lakes is here, because when you talk to the major CEOs in this state, if there's a commonality, I've heard, irrespective of, there'll be some ideological differences when you talk to some of these folks. Some will be more conservative, some may be more liberal, a lot will be kind of in the middle. But a commonality I hear from the senior business leaders in the state, and not just this year, but over the last number of years, is you better take care of the University of Minnesota. And the other commonality I've heard over these last number of years is you're not doing very well by the University of Minnesota. And you can think of the consequences of that in terms of how the major business leaders in the state view the university's importance. And again, we're not just talking about the Carlson School, as good as it is. We're talking about the totality of the University of Minnesota. So that's my editorial comment on behalf of the university. And I know, Madam Chair, you have the president scheduled to speak and offer a little bit more detail of what they need and why they need it.
And Senator Cohen, would you like to just highlight the bill itself?
Certainly. What we have in the bill are, and it's a very simple bill, it basically provides the university with what we're in Section 1, what we're titling the research investment, providing the $64 million that's requested by the university to maintain their core functions and to make sure that we do that at a level that continues to add, to be blunt, monies to the operations of the University of Minnesota. Keep in mind, the cuts to the university over that first decade of the century were significant. We still don't get back to where we ought to be with the University of Minnesota. That's the first section of the bill. The second is what's called Healthy Minnesota, and that's actually a supplement to try to deal with the variety of healthcare needs that emanate from the University of Minnesota throughout the state, whether it be medical research, healthcare professionals. Members might recall that last year, Senators Sieben, the chair, and myself were very involved with the proposal for regenerative medicine, which was a partnership between the university and Ohio. And it's not my intent to start discussing the details of that, but we were successful in having that included in the supplemental finance bill. To be fair, it helped to have the chair and myself as members of the conference committee for that purpose. But that was a real priority on the part of the Senate. And we were able to include that in that supplemental finance bill. It's something that's been quite successful. I was very pleased to have been the chief author several years ago of the legislation to allow the university to accelerate the bonding process for the purpose of the biomedical facilities so that we could try to create the next Medtronic. Obviously, one of the great stories, one of the great economic and medical stories of Minnesota history, but to allow us to accelerate that in a way that the university had requested previously under President Brunix. This section of the bill continues that. And the last, of course, is the medical school investment, the request of $30 million to not only, and it cites the need to train physicians in rural and the underserved communities. But it also allows the university to maintain its faculty, its direct faculty, its research faculty, so that we get back to where the U of M Medical School once was. It was considered, not that the school has fallen apart, not that the school is not still producing high-quality medical care and physicians, but it was a top 10 school in this country. It was one of the schools, and known throughout the country for its research capacity, for the physicians it produced. And I would hope we would agree, irrespective of political party, geography, or ideology, we want the University of Minnesota Medical School back to where it was. So the sections of the bill are very simple. It basically encompasses the university's request.
Very good. Thank you very much, Senator Cohen, for bringing the bill forward. And now would you like your testifiers?
Sure. So President Kaler is first up.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you for this opportunity. I'm Eric Kaler, and it's my privilege and honor to serve as president of the University of Minnesota. Thank you, Senator Cohen, for your deep and enduring support for the University of Minnesota and for higher education. And I'm a little chagrined that you were able to read the result of that basketball game into the Senate record, but you did that admirably. Thank you for that. I'm joined today by Board of Regents Chair Rick Beeson, Vice President for Finance Richard Fitzenreiter, and Dr. Brooks Jackson are also here to help me answer questions you may have. Also pleased to acknowledge that Faculty Government Relations Rep Gary Gardner is here, and I'm accompanied by a group of our students who are supportive of this bill and your efforts to partner with the university. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the story of the University of Minnesota in 2015 is one of accountability, affordability, and accessibility. It is underscored by our commitment to operational excellence, a partnership with the state to fuel innovation in Minnesota, and by the ambition of our faculty, staff, and students. As you know, as part of our partnership with you in fiscal year 2014, we accomplished and, in fact, exceeded all five performance measures set forth by the legislature. We improved graduation rates for low-income students on our Twin Cities campus, increased the total number of undergraduate STEM degrees on our Twin Cities campus, improved overall graduation rates, increased invention disclosures, 343 invention disclosures, all driven, as they say, by discovery. And we decreased administrative costs by $15 million. As this slide shows, and I believe the Minnesota Sunshine is a pretty good competitor today, but you do have these in front of you in printed form as well. We are on pace to reduce our administrative costs by $90 million over 6 years, and we're ahead of schedule. For example, in fiscal year 2014, we reduced staff costs by $11.4 million and saved $7.4 million on operating costs for a total of $18.8 million in reallocations. And this is a 13-page letter we sent to management and Budget Commissioner Myron Franz in January. On this slide are just a few examples, some big, some small, but all strategic, of our reductions in administrative costs. With these reallocations from administration and lower priority activities to mission activities and strategic priorities, we've been able to reduce the need for tuition increases. In fact, with $15 million in each of the next 2 years, we will reallocate from administrative costs the need for a tuition raise that would be an additional 2.1%. So I'm very proud of our commitment to affordability, and I thank you for your support of that. In addition to having made many budgetary reallocations to help remain affordable, as the state's only comprehensive research university, we are also competing at the highest level amongst our national competitors. And that's why this bill's investment in research is supportive of your priorities for the U and for mine. Now, for the first time, we have been ranked in the top 25 in 9 comprehensive categories by the well-known Center for Measuring University Performance, which is housed at Arizona State University. This center surveys institutions across the country and scores them on metrics, which range from the amount of research dollars we attract, to donor support, to awards our faculty earn, to the ACT or SAT scores of our incoming freshmen. And what's important to know is that for the first time this year, we are among a handful of only 8 other peer institutions that rank in the top 25 of these 9 very diverse categories. And for your reference, the others are UC Berkeley, UCLA, Florida, Illinois, Michigan, Texas, North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Pretty good company indeed. So if you would like to say that this is a top 10 university, you can, because it's true. And like each of those great research universities I mentioned, for their states, we are, for our state, the economic engine. Since I became president nearly 4 years ago, I've said we must be among the conversation of the nation's top public research universities. And we are, not just in funding, but in honors, quality of students and faculty, and operational efficiency. And as an engine of the state's innovation culture, last year we set a university record by creating 15 startup companies. That's a total of 67 startup companies in the past 8 years, each of which creates jobs and has a positive economic impact. And it's that sort of economic impact that's recognized by business leaders from across the state who've written a letter to you supporting the value of the university and the investment you're proposing today. In a few minutes, Land O'Lakes President and CEO Chris Polosinski will testify after I do, sharing his view of what the university means to the state. As this slide shows, from our campuses to our extension offices to our research and outreach center, our impact is wide and deep across the state of Minnesota. As a leader in agribusiness and food, our campuses in Crookston and Morris, along with scholars on the Twin Cities campus and through extension, are deeply involved in preparing the next generation of ag industry leaders. I hope you saw the article in last Thursday's Star Tribune detailing how we're a key supplier of the human capital for the agriculture industry. In Duluth, we're leading efforts in freshwater research, a critical area for a world in which water will be the oil of the 21st century, as well as in mining and applied research through the National Natural Resources Research Institute. In Rochester, we're partnering with our friends at the Mayo Clinic while growing from scratch a unique, nimble, health-focused campus. Our focus on healthcare training and delivery is statewide, and this slide shows our more than 1,700 affiliation agreements. The university is an incomparable asset to the state and to your district, as this slide shows. In your districts alone, there are thousands of students, staff, and alumni. The numbers are impressive, as you can see. So, Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, Senator Claussen, members of the committee, we are very grateful for Senate File 1195. It accomplishes many of our goals for this session. But if I may, I will briefly show you where our request, as approved by the Board of Regents, started. As you know, my highest priority, and that of our regents, has been affordability for students. In our original request, we sought funding for tuition relief, for a new approach to maintaining and repairing facilities, for investments in the medical school and our state's health, and for programs to create economic development across the state. The university's mission is broad, and our original request was focused. It addressed the needs of our students, their family, and the prosperity of the state. As you know, in a supplemental budget, Governor Dayton has proposed full funding to relieve tuition increases and in addition, to provide investments in our medical school. And I'm very pleased with how Senate File 1195 invests in the core mission of the U and my vision for the future of the U. I'm thankful for this bill and your proposed investment in the university to support the vision articulated in our recent strategic plan, which is to tackle the most pressing grand challenges facing the state, the nation, and the world. Senate File 1195 will help us to educate Minnesota's increasingly diverse population from every community, especially students who show the greatest promise. It will allow us to strengthen and build lasting partnerships across the state, including and especially with the agriculture community and the communities of greater Minnesota. It supports our commitment to maintain and advance the commitment to operational excellence I spoke about a few minutes ago. It supports our goal to maintain a low cost of admission. In short, Senate File 1195 supports and enhances the university's partnership with the state to benefit our students, their families, Minnesota's health, and the state's economic vibrancy. This bill also embodies central goals of my administration. First, to enhance our research enterprise. Secondly, to improve the state's health. Third, to engage and partner with communities statewide, meeting at the intersection of the state's needs and our expertise and resources. Fourth, to keep the university affordable and accessible to a diverse student body. And as you know, it has been a priority of mine to work diligently and tirelessly to ensure the University of Minnesota's education is affordable. And this bill will allow us to keep on that track. By your investment in research, we will be able to hold the line on tuition reallocation from other areas to do so. For an incoming first-year student, we'll be able to reduce total undergraduate burden tuition burden by between $2,100 to $2,600 over 4 years. Impacts on graduate and professional students vary by program, from $1,600 for master's students to $5,000 for our medical school students. So with your investment, approximately 53,000 students and their families will benefit across all campuses as we direct our current resources to the cost of educating all of them. Let me give our important partnership a historic perspective. This is a plot of the total state investment and tuition per capita student over time, which is a measure of the university's spending on each student. And over time, we've been able to reduce the cost to graduate a student by about 11% in inflation-controlled dollars. We've reduced the cost to educate a student by 11%. But what is important is that during that 18-year period, you see, enrollment has soared from 49,000 students in 1997 to 61,500 seeking degrees this past fall. I'll draw your attention to the colored bars, maroon and gold bars. In 1997, the state paid 70% of the total cost and families paid 30%. Over the years, as Senator Cohen described, that proportion shifted. This year, the state's investment covers only 42% of the cost, while students and families pick up the other 58%. Well, Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, Senator Claussen, I've been seeking to rebalance our partnership, and your bill and your investment will help us to do just that. For that, I thank you, our students thank you, and their families thank you. Let me turn now to the Healthy Minnesota investment. We are Minnesota's only land-grant university and its most important provider of healthcare professional training and education. We have a clear vision, which is to train, to serve, to discover, and ultimately to cure. And that means doing so as we meet the needs of our state's aging and diverse population, be it in greater Minnesota or in underserved communities in the metro area. We began the session proposing an $11.5 million investment in each year of the biennium to advance the strategy. It was focused on new interprofessional training sites, increasing the healthcare workforce in key fields such as primary care, geriatrics, and dental health, and incentives for health professionals to practice in underserved areas. Senate File 1195 proposes a general fund appropriation of $7.5 million in FY16 and $18 million in FY17 for a biennial total of $25.5 million for healthcare professional workforce development and to create new models of health promotion and care. We recently adjusted our initial request because of Governor Dayton's actions in response to the Special Committee on the Future of the University's Medical School. As you may remember, last August, the governor formed a Blue Ribbon Committee and charged it with developing recommendations to ensure the medical school's national preeminence. This would include attracting and retaining world-class faculty, staff, students, and residents, expanding the university's clinical services, to increase our ability to be a training site for health professional students and residents, as a site for cutting-edge clinical research, and finally, to address the state's health workforce needs to serve Minnesota's broad continuum of needs, primary care, aging population, and chronic health need. That Blue Ribbon Committee issued a report in January recommending seven strategies to meet this charge, including investments in research, faculty recruitment, workforce development, and facilities. And in response to those recommendations, Governor Dayton has proposed a $30 million investment in FY16 and 17 for a medical school to hire top researchers as part of medical discovery teams, to support clinical research support services, and to invest in physician training programs that benefit rural underserved communities. This funding, along with that envisioned by the governor for the next biennium, would allow the medical school to hire 50 new researchers, 8 in 16-17 and 10 per year thereafter, helping it to increase NIH grant awards and improve the ranking of the medical school. With Governor Dayton's aspiration to lift the medical school to greater prominence nationally, with your support of the Blue Ribbon Commission's recommendation, and with your investments, we would take immediate and ambitious action to address the state's most critical healthcare opportunities. The slide highlights those actions. So in closing, Senate File 1195 aligns with our vision, our ambition, our commitment to the state, and our devotion to our land-grant mission. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I pledge to you the university's commitment to financial responsibility and affordability, to prepare the next generation of the state's leaders, and as always, to drive to discover new cures, new treatments, and new knowledge for the benefit of all Minnesotans. With that, I thank you for this opportunity. Thank you again, Senator Cohen, for your extraordinary support, and I'm eager to answer questions you may have. But before that, with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce Chris Polosinski, President and CEO of Land O'Lakes. Mr. Polosinski and his company are prime examples of the kind of partnerships with business and industry to which I am so deeply committed. Mr. Polosinski and Land O'Lakes are great friends of the university, and I'm proud to have his support for our budget request.
Thank you very much, President Kaler.
And, Madam Chair, if I might.
Senator Cohen.
Before Mr. Polosinski testifies, I just want to point out that there's a letter, and he's a signatory as well, but a letter that I think was distributed to members from a number of significant business leaders in the state. And if I can make two comments about the letter, and I hope I'm not stepping on your testimony, I want to make two comments about the letter. The first is that in putting together this hearing, we didn't have the opportunity to get as many names as we could. We could have gotten a host of other names. Second, I don't know everybody in the letter, but I know most people. And I'll just tell members of the committee, this group of names is as much of a mixture politically as you can find anywhere in the state. It is folks that I know to be conservative Republicans, folks I know to be liberal Democrats, folks I know to not profess a particular political allegiance. I think that makes it, I don't mean to bring politics into this discussion, except to suggest that the importance of the university clearly has transcended, as I mentioned earlier, geography, politics, and ideology. And this letter represents that.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. And good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Chris Polosinski, President and CEO of Wine Lakes.
And Mr. Polosinski, I believe the mic is not where it needs to
Thank
be.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
Terrific.
You.
Land O'Lakes is a Fortune 200 company based in Arden Hills, Minnesota, Minnesota's third largest privately held company and the second largest cooperative in the nation. Our annual sales are $15 billion, generated through diversified operations in agribusiness and food production. You're probably all familiar with our Land O'Lakes Dairy Foods brand, I hope so, but other major brands within our portfolio include Purina Animal Feed and Winfield Solutions Crop Inputs. We were formed in 1921 by farmers, and we remain owned by farmers and agricultural producers and do business in all 50 states and more than 60 countries. In Minnesota, our membership includes over 100 local cooperatives and nearly 1,000 individual agricultural service members and milk producers. Our member business volume in Minnesota exceeds $1 billion, and we employ about 2,200 people in Minnesota with an annual payroll of approximately $190 million. I'm here today, as you heard earlier, to express my support for the university's biannual request and tell you how much the U impacts the lives of all Minnesotans, including Land O'Lakes employees, our customers, our members, and their families. As you've heard earlier, the University of Minnesota is an important asset that brings value to the state's overall business community. And in my view, the university, with its scientists, its researchers, its business school expertise, and its students, is the state's single most important driving force for creating a culture of innovation, an entrepreneurial spirit, and in fact, an entire ecosystem of job creation. As the state's only comprehensive research university, the U partners with hundreds of companies to discover new products, processes, cures, and treatments that very often move quickly into the marketplace for all of our common good. It is, by a collection of measures, the eighth most active public research institution in the nation, as you heard earlier from President Kaler, in the state that is 21st most populous. The U fights above its weight in research, and it can do even more with your support for this funding request. Of course, I'm particularly interested in the university's impact on agribusiness, the food industry, rural Minnesota, and job creation. But I'm also supportive of President Kaler's focus to make the university more operationally excellent and affordable for all students. As for food production and agribusiness, it is the state's second largest industry with 80,000 farms, 2,300 food companies, which generate more than $15 billion in agricultural products each year. We're engaged in one of the most vibrant growth industries of our era. In fact, I think the most exciting growth industry of our era, as the need for global food production is going to increase by 70% by the year 2050 to feed a growing world population. To compete and excel in this growing global industry, Minnesota's agribusiness community, as do other key industries in the state, such as biotech, medical devices, robotics, mining, and water quality, need the resources and expertise and research of the University of Minnesota. In the past 3.5 years that President Kaler has been at his job, he has emphasized the fundamental partnership between the university and the state's business community. Under President Kaler, the university is open to business and open for serving business. In my area of food and agribusiness, the university has worked with us on several fronts. This includes developing new approaches to protect food safety and security using novel strategies for detecting contamination. The university has also developed new approaches for managing risk in the food supply chain and advancing animal feed safety. Beyond those specific areas, one of the greatest areas of general benefit is that the U provides our industry great education for the next generation of agribusiness professionals. Again, as you heard from President Kaler, I hope you saw the front page article in last Thursday's Star Tribune. At Land O'Lakes, we know firsthand and benefit firsthand from the talented individuals who graduate from the University of Minnesota. We're located not far from here, and approximately 20% of our headquarters workforce has at least one degree from the University of Minnesota. Given our need for talent in the future, to help farmers grow more food in an increasingly productive and sustainable manner to help feed a growing world, we recently invested $25 million with the university as part of our commitment to continue to develop the next generation of leaders. I urge your support for Senate Bill 1195 and the university's funding request. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Polsinski. And it's perfect that you're here today because actually today is Minnesota Cooperative Day on the Hill. So I had folks from that organization come and see me, and I really appreciate that you've joined us here today.
Thank you. I think you had some of our members with you today.
I did, yes. So, members, questions for Senator Cohen or Senator Torres-Ray?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, this question is actually, we're going to do a presentation of the University of Minnesota budget request and then your bill. I'm going to try to kind of put both in here because in line 1.14, you have the increased diversity of the university students, faculty, and staff. And Senator Cohen, you need to know that since I have about 8,000 people attending the University of Minnesota, I've been invited to a number of events during the last few days to talk about the impact of the cuts to very diverse staff that support the university. I had a meeting with a number of support staff that work in different capacities at the University of Minnesota. There were about 200 people in attendance. From clerical support, people working in janitorial positions. The overwhelming number of people who were there were people of color who expressed some sincere disappointment with the university's approach to eliminating staff without asking for some kind of input in the process from these very individuals. Many people felt that their jobs have been compounded in terms of complexity and volume as a result of these cuts. And we had people who also came to talk personally to me about the absolute neglect of ethnic studies programs, such as the Chicano Studies Program, the Roy Wilkins Center, and others, who have brought a significant number of students of color to the university and have found very important connections that needed to exist at the University of Minnesota. And they also mention the significant effort of the university to bring and what they quote-unquote said import professionals of color from different areas in the country who really are clueless about the significant academic disparities that exist in Minnesota. I have been paying attention to these discussions because, as I said, a lot of my constituents are involved in this, and I am quite alarmed about this. And I wanted to bring this to your attention because I know that you do care very deeply about this issue. You support that, like me, where you have significant diversity within your own district. So I wanted to ask the president to tell us a little bit. I'm very grateful for this document that is in our folder right now that actually puts together some things that I wasn't aware of. Actually, during this meeting with AFSCME and other workers, they talk about the significant cuts of administrative positions, and I see that within every single department that has had, you know, some close to $1 million cut, $500,000, the auxiliary services, $3 million. So it's very significant, but one after the other, the cuts are really administrative cuts. And I just want to hear a little bit more about that and want to hear, Mr. President, what can we do, especially what is your plan to support in this regard, you know, when we talk in this bill about increasing the diversity of the students, the faculty, the staff, how can I respond to these very clear concerns that I hear from my community?
So Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Obviously, I want President Kaler to speak in more substance to Senator Torres Ray, an important question, but just a couple of comments. Obviously, Madam Chair and Senator Torres Ray, you and I share a significant concern. We've worked on achievement gap legislation, and we know the importance of what's happening with an increasingly diverse Minnesota, although the slight correction is, and it doesn't diminish my interest at all, actually my district is not particularly diverse, but that doesn't in any way underscore my support for some of these important issues. But the one comment before we have Senator Kaler talk in more detail in response to your questions is to keep in mind, as I mentioned at the outset, the chair and I have authored legislation in tandem, because if we want to talk about a more diverse student body at the University of Minnesota, separate from some of the other important issues you raise, we're going to have to make sure we have a grant program that provides support to underserved families and families with less ability to pay for the cost of the University of Minnesota. So I see this presentation of this bill certainly in tandem with the chair's bill, making sure we increase the state grant program going to these diverse families. So that's a more general comment, but I want to have the president address some of your concerns in particularity.
Thank you. President Kaler.
Chair Bonoff, Senator Torres-Ray, thank you for your question. There are several streams to it, and I will try to address them separately if I can. First is students of color. Let me preface the details with an overarching statement. We've worked for the past year on a series of important ways with many community meetings and open conversation about how to create a more welcoming campus climate in terms of diversity and experience for students, faculty, and staff of color. I admit that the University of Minnesota has a long way to go in this regard. We pulled together literally hundreds of people in those conversations and synthesized from that a report on improving campus climate that contains 16 recommendations, and we've identified the offices that will drive on each one of those recommendations. For example, last year, prior to that conversation, we created the President's Emerging Scholars Program. It's an additional $1 million of scholarship aid targeted to students who come from areas from economic situations that are disadvantaged. And unfortunately, as you and I know, that disproportionately affects students of color. So this is a program that provides a summer activity as well as enhanced scholarship support so that students are able to move more effectively in the university. And I'm pleased to note that our first to second year retention rate is around 91, a little more than 91%, and the first to second year retention rate for students of color was higher than that for the institution overall. So we are making a difference in enabling students to come and move through the university. We're working to make changes in policies that create a more welcoming environment. There's a considerable amount of controversy and news about our recent decision to eliminate, in the absence of further information, the use of race as a descriptor in our crime alerts. This is a situation in which I was moved by student conversations, one of whom is in the room with us today, and it's created enormous pushback from some communities, but I think acceptance and welcome on the campus. So these are steps to create a more welcoming environment. I could talk for a long time about this, and I'll just finish with this part of my remarks by saying we have not done a good job in recruiting faculty of color, and not just faculty in ethnic studies areas, but faculty across the university who are people of color. And so I've instructed the provost to hold a firm hand on faculty applicant pools, the so-called short list. And we will not bring candidates to interview on campus until that short list reflects the presence of people of color and the appropriate gender diversity. So we're trying hard to bring this opportunity to faculty in general. There certainly has been a lot of activity around the Chicano and Latino Studies program at the university. We've recently allocated an additional faculty line there. Many in the community think that is not enough, and we have heard that. But on the other hand, we have hundreds of students of color who are majoring in many other fields at the university, and they need additional faculty members too. So that is probably too short of an answer to your question, and so I'll close with a sincere offer to sit together with you and talk through what you're hearing from your constituents and to outline in more detail what we're doing at the university to try to improve the situation you've addressed.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. President. I do understand that it is incredibly difficult to for an institution as large as the University of Minnesota and you know, the complexity of all the services you provide. But I have significant documentation in my office that has been provided, and I would like to review it with you, that actually indicates that this process has had a significant impact on really the environment in within the University of Minnesota, as well as the actual numbers of support, administrative support, support positions, actual students, and faculty that has left the University of Minnesota. So it is, you know, this is a conversation that I am very interested in having. It's a conversation that many people in communities of color and leaders of color really want to have with you. I have contacted some of the regents of the university to let them know that this is, you know, I would like to review those numbers with you, because I also have the statistics that were presented to me that you mentioned right now about the retention and some of the targeted efforts. Unfortunately, the numbers that I'm reviewing, again, with respect to specific faculty that has left the University of Minnesota, diverse faculty that are leaving, your inability to retain faculty of color that constantly leaves the University of Minnesota, as well as the significant impact on cuts for administrative support and elimination of positions that were held by predominantly people of color at the university.
Other questions from committee members?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Sparks.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank Senator Cohen for bringing this proposal forward, and for the President, and obviously Mr. Polzinski today. You serve with me on the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee, and I think we all understand around this table that the University of Minnesota is an economic engine for our entire state. And I think the testimony showed that you know, agriculture plays a huge role in our state. We have a new dean now at the College CFANS, who, in my opinion, is doing a great job, and I think that the President and all of us are very committed to continuing to make sure not only the university does good things in research, but also that agriculture is a major part of what the U does, too. So I just want to thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony, and look forward to helping you move this legislation forward.
Thank you very much, Senator Sparks.
Thank you.
And I do share those thoughts and those comments. And one of the pieces of the bill, if you look at on page 1, lines 1.17 to 1.20, talks about reiterating our commitment to the new structure we have of providing 5% of a holdback on our funding for the meeting of performance metrics. And as President Kaler stated, the university had to meet 4 of 5 to get that last biennium, 3 of 5, thank you, and they met all 5. And so we, again, will work in collaboration with the university to come up with those metrics, but Senator Torres-Ray, one of those metrics last time did deal with increasing diversity, and we will agree on one this time as well to do that. And I, President Kaler is being a little bit humble when he speaks about his emerging students program, and because I know that within that program that you actually looked at admitting students through a different lens, that you actually relaxed your standards of who you might take when looking at the traditional measures of who can be admitted to the university because of your strong commitment to expand the diversity at the University of Minnesota. And so that program was actually given recognition nationally, and I want to thank you for that and let you know that we really appreciate that and hope that you will continue to expand that. And if there's anything that you need from us in order to do that, we're here to listen with regard to that.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. That program was recognized by Michelle Obama at a program at the White House. I appreciate you. I'm trying to be a little Minnesotan about that, but yes.
I had to brag for you.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I do, I'm troubled by Senator Torres-Ray's comments, because we worked very hard on this, and I'm eager to see the data she has and talk in more detail with her. And I would amend your comments. We did not relax standards for students, but we considered more broadly the experiences that they had that reflected in their abilities as might be perceived in more standard ways.
Thank you.
Those students are doing well at the University of Minnesota.
Great. Very good. And I understand, Senator Cohn, you have to move on, so we'll keep the university here for their broader...
I'll be back, but I need to go across the hall for a vote, but I want to listen to the rest of the university's presentation. So thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Cohn. So, President Kaler, and I don't know, is it Mr. Pszczynski going to stay with us?
I think so. Yes, Madam Chair, he will.
Very good, Mr. Pszczynski. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair and President Kaler. I'm sorry I had to step out to visit with constituents. I heard you say over and over and over again your commitment to affordability. And I know you're going to present your budget here, and I'm hoping that you're going to address for us here in this committee what your efforts are to make the University of Minnesota more affordable to Minnesota families, because I, for one, don't think that the current tuition rates are affordable. The current tuition rates are $13,626 with fees for residents of the state of Minnesota. And when the last time I checked, the annual average income per family in Minnesota is $58,000 for a family. And so I don't believe that's affordable. I understand that the university gives grants and financial aid to help offset in certain circumstances, but not enough. And I know that our students carry a very high debt load per student when compared to the national debt load for students. And so if you would, in your presentation, please address specifically how you are going to make the university more affordable to residents of the state of Minnesota.
So, Madam Chair, Senator...
President Kaler.
I walked through some slides while you were out of the room, so I presented my budget.
I did see them.
That's fine. But let me speak to your questions in particular. Let me start with the fact that we give hundreds of millions of dollars in financial aid, so that if your expected family contribution from the FAFSA form is zero, which reflects a family income of about $30,000 or less, the university, with the combination of our scholarships, the state grant program, and the Pell Grant, will fund that student at slightly more than the cost of tuition alone. So for the most needy families, tuition at the university is essentially paid for. For families with family income of $75,000 or less, with the combination of financial aid that we give, we are, depending on the numbers next year, will be the first or second most affordable higher education institution in the state of Minnesota. So my point being that we give a lot of financial aid to our most needy students. For families in upper income brackets, in fact, I do think $13,000 in tuition is affordable for a family that's making $150,000 a year. As to student debt, the language around student debt is quite interesting, because what you often hear reported is the average student debt, which is about $27,000 at the University of Minnesota. But that is for students who graduate with debt. 37% of our students graduate with no debt whatsoever, and 4% graduate with $1,000 or less in debt. So for more than 40% of students, there is no student debt problem for those students and their families. In addition, the distribution of debt is very interesting, because often in the national conversation, there's the story of somebody who's borrowed $150,000 to earn a bachelor's degree. We graduated over 7,000 students last year, and exactly 6 of those 7,000 students had student debt of more than $100,000. Now, I don't know how you can borrow $100,000 and spend it to get a degree at the University of Minnesota, because it doesn't cost that much, but that's the statistics. So I just think peeling that onion a little bit about the number of students who graduate debt-free and realizing we're talking about the average debt of students is important. Final point I would make on this is that $26,000 average debt, if you're in the part of the group that has that, reflects a huge investment in yourself. Statistics show that the difference in lifetime earnings between a high school degree and a college degree is well over $1 million. So $1 million return on a $26,000 investment is a pretty good one. So having said all of that, to answer your question directly, we are driving for administrative efficiencies, and we are working hard to be as lean as we can be. And that has cost to people that have been addressed by your neighbor. So we are trying to find a balance for the University of Minnesota, and we are trying to be effective and efficient at what we do.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair and President Kaler, I appreciate your analysis and breaking it down for me, but what I hear is 60% of your students still graduate with an average debt load of $27,000. That's a huge debt load, and it's a huge burden for these students graduating, because not all can find jobs and positions that will help them to pay back those student loans, and so they are graduating with huge burdens. And I also challenge your analysis of the $150,000 income. $150,000 in income is not net income. And what you're saying is that these families should be able to afford more than 10% of their gross income for 1 year of schooling for one child. And so I hope that you will consider that in your assessments. The university can do and should do better to make the university more accessible to Minnesota students and more affordable.
Any other comments from the members? Yes, Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, I just want to get some clarity here. Is this the total of the presentation?
So, Senator Peterson, first, Senator Cohen presented his bill,
right,
which will be laid over. So there will not be a vote on the bill. Okay. Then the university is going to follow up by giving us their overall budget request.
And that's
now
going to happen right now.
Right, exactly.
Okay,
great. Yep.
I'll reserve my comments then.
Okay, good. So, okay. President Kaler.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm a little bit at a loss for words, because my understanding was that the slideshow that I just walked you through reflected the information that you desired. So, I mean, I can talk some more
if you want me to
respond to see if Senator Peterson's question provide the information he'd like
to
have.
I apologize. President Kaler, what we actually had, we also had that you were going to have Mr. Fitzenreiter present, and you're going to have Dr. Jackson present, and so I thought there were more things to present, but that's certainly not necessary. They're available for questions if members have questions.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. That was Senator Vaughn, I'm sorry. That was our understanding, and we can provide as much granularity around the budget request as members would like to have.
Because in essence, the bill before you is a reflection of your budget request, just put in words differently. Thank you. Yes, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, that was sort of my understanding when I saw him going through the slideshow. So, well, thank you, Mr. President, for joining us here today. And I've had conversations with all the regents and regent candidates, and I have a slightly different perspective maybe than most on the university's funding and tuition and the importance that has with regard to your strategic mission in particular. And I was just wondering if you could, and you may have done this already, just sort of lay out what, in your view, is the mission, what's the goal, what when you took over as president, what were the things that you wanted to see the university accomplish and identify as at the end of your tenure?
Senator Bonhoff, Senator Peterson, thank you for that question. My goal for the University of Minnesota is for it to execute, we to execute on its land-grant mission of education, research, and public service to the highest degree possible. And in order to do that, we have embarked on a strategic planning process that's identified a grand challenge framework for us to deliver on those missions. There are few institutions that have the breadth and depth of the University of Minnesota, not only in the United States, but in the world. And so our ability to bring those strengths against the grand challenges facing the world, including a shortage of food, a scarcity of water, the inability to control diseases, conflict, poverty. These are hugely grand challenges. And so my ambition for the institution is for us to lay our many powerful disciplinary tools against those problems in ways that bring strength at the intersection of disciplines, and that we are known as the place where famine was done away with because of research in our agricultural school, a place where cancer was cured because of the activities in our research school, and a place that produces the best prepared students to enter the world anywhere.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's kind of what sort of the thing that I thought you might say. And so I look at your budget now. Just real quick, how many applicants does the University of Minnesota have every year?
President Kaler.
Senator Bonhoff, Senator Peterson, the Twin Cities campus receives approximately 45,000 applications. I do not have the other campus numbers off the top of my head.
That's fine.
But it's thousands more than that, so certainly in excess of 50,000.
I have a series of questions, actually, Madam Chair. And how many of those do you admit every year?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, we admit, and I'll just restrict my numbers to the Twin Cities campus, we admit approximately a third of those students, so we would admit about 17,000, and approximately a third of those students ultimately matriculate at the university. Very rough numbers.
And what is what would, Mr. President, Madam Chair, what would your capacity be if all every year for admission? So you're admitting about 6,000 to 7,000 a year, and how many could the university admit if you chose to, if they all chose to go to the university?
Senator Bonhoff, Senator Peterson, and in addition to that, I should tell you we admit around 3,000 transfer students each year that come from primarily from Minsky schools. And those numbers reflect our best ability to fill our capacity completely.
Okay.
So that we, for example, in some areas, College of Science and Engineering is the most easily obvious example, we are at capacity in our ability to teach introductory chemistry classes because we use laboratories very, very heavily.
Senator Peterson.
So thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. President. And the accolades that your university has received of late are impressive. You pointed out the spreadsheet where you were in the top 25 and 10 crucial metrics. All of those are obviously incredibly important to the mission that you outlined at the beginning of your comments. Amongst those items, I don't see tuition and quote-unquote affordability, and of course that means something different to everybody, as we just illustrated between yourself and Senator Ortman. I don't see tuition and affordability on that list of things that are measured to classify you as a top research university. So my question, I guess, is, especially given the fact that you only are admitting, and you only have the capacity to admit, roughly less than one quarter of all applicants to your institution. How exactly is tuition strategic to the broader mission that you outlined? Because I don't exactly see that.
President Kaler.
So, Senator Bonoff, Chair Bonoff, Senator Pearson, this is a really interesting question, and I would love to have an expanded conversation with you about this. But you are right that tuition is not one of the metrics used to judge universities by the center at Arizona State that I'm quoting. These are measures of impact, measures of the overall quality and scope and impact of the institution. But the issue of tuition arises to me when I talked about being able to prepare the next generation of people to tackle those challenges. And in order for those people to come to the University of Minnesota, the University of Minnesota needs to be affordable. And driving that affordability has been on my agenda since I got here. And you will remember in the last biennium, it was our leading request to be able to freeze tuition. Many would like us to reduce tuition, but you can't reduce till you freeze. And so we were able to do that with the help of the legislature and the governor.
Senator Peterson.
But I guess, Madam Chair and Mr. President, I guess where the disconnect comes in about whether you're actually having a hard time filling the seats with world-class students, your selectivity in particular, since I was a high school senior, has dramatically increased. In other words, you're taking a higher caliber student at entrance. You have more than enough applicants. In any other sort of dynamic, I guess, if we were going to look at this scenario, the tuition freeze just doesn't seem to make any sense. And in particular, in light of the fact that the incremental revenue that you're requesting of $148.2 million in the next biennium, we're using up half of that on something that I guess outside of its political value, and that's significant, you're in an institution that's largely driven by those considerations, I don't really understand how a tuition freeze is strategic to your mission based on anything that you've said, and frankly, I think the committee should consider that, and that an increase, allowing you to have an increase that's reasonable, as you outlined, and I think you made a very clear case to Senator Ortman with regard to affordability, would mean that those dollars could go to a number of other things that I think you could articulate in a much clearer manner, are more in line with the things, those lofty goals that you outlined about being a world-class institution, a destination research institution where you're bringing in the best and brightest minds from all over the world to take on those challenges. I just don't see how tuition has anything to do with that.
President Kaler.
Senator Bonoff, Senator Peterson, I guess we disagree because as I attempted in my response to Senator Ortman and her concern about student debt, so in the scenario in which we were to increase tuition, many of those students would have to take on increased debt to come to the University of Minnesota, and I would prefer not to see that happen.
Senator Peterson, I laughed a little bit because I've actually had this conversation with President Kaler as well. And if you'll notice that in the bill before you that Senator Cohen put forward, there is no language freezing tuition. So while that was in President Kaler's budget request, sure, it is not in the bill before you. There is not a tuition freeze. And then just the other side of that coin is I think we all have to appreciate and understand that as a land-grant university, there is a spoken commitment to serve the people of Minnesota. And so while, you know, the market may bear a higher price, and we can certainly see that as we look at our, you know, private colleges across the country, and I think Minnesota actually does a better job than most states in terms of private colleges being affordable because of how much aid they provide. But while the market may bear it, it might not be consistent with the land-grant mission. And so I do applaud the university's commitment to keep tuition low. I don't think that should be personally, you know, if the university chooses to keep their tuition flat, I've always said I don't think necessarily the bill should go to us. That would be a university choice. But.
And Senator Bonhoff, to that point, you are right, and I should have made this notice. This is an amount to fund the university adequately, and I will tell you, in response to adequate funding from the state, I will recommend to the Board of Regents that we do not raise tuition. That's the linear conversation in which, as an autonomous university, is the board's authority. The board has the authority to set tuition.
Great. Thank you very much for that. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and President Kaler. My question, well, it's glad to understand that the request for the freeze is not necessarily in the budget, but in the proposal in front of us. But I do have a question specifically to the dental school, because I've toured the facility. It's fantastic. It's state-of-the-art, and certainly know the value of that. And I also serve in Health and Human Services, so I see a lot of the gaps that we have, and you also talk about it in your Healthy Minnesota proposal to expand education and training programs to address workforce shortages. And you mentioned dentistry, but my impression, my understanding is that we're not really doing anything to really alleviate the cost of the dental school, which is higher than the medical school in terms of the cost overall. Can you talk about that a little bit, because I don't know if members know that, and I found that very interesting. That is, it is quite cost prohibitive, and it's very it's a great school, but at the same time we know we have shortages in our state, and we're trying to tackle them with other legislation currently. So what can the university, as a land-grant university, do to help us in that regard with regards to the dental school?
So,
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Senator Franzen, if I can call on my friend Dean Jackson to come forward and speak a little bit about that. While he's coming, I will say that you certainly are correct. A dental school is very expensive. It is literally a handcrafted education. There aren't very many modern educations that are as medieval as this training of a student at the hand of the master. Technology has helped, and we have a national leading laboratory simulator where students can drill or do other tasks as needed. And this proposed adequate funding, appropriate funding of the university would allow us to freeze tuition in the dental school. But Dr. Jackson.
Dean
yes,
Jackson.
Madam Chair, Senator Franzen. Yes, to pick up on that, the dental school is more expensive in the tuition than the medical school, and that's for several reasons. Although both are very technologically expensive, the medical school has certain financial advantages over the dental school in the sense that we have more potentially, you know, philanthropy, grateful patients. We have potentially more research NIH funding that helps offset some of the expenses administratively as well as faculty in terms of the expense. So that is one of the main reasons, the difference in that the dental school is more expensive for the students than they are in the medical school, which is why I think tuition, holding tuition flat is extremely important. The dental students have about over $206,000 debt. Medical school is about $186,000 in debt per student. So this tuition freeze is really important. As you know, there are 16 counties in Minnesota which only have one dentist. There's one county with no dentist. They're older. They're going to retire soon. Part of this becomes less appealing to students thinking of a career when the tuition is so high and the debt becomes so high. It's important for us to be competitive. This is across the university because students do have choices. They could take on increased debt and pay that, or they can go to some other institutions. At Johns Hopkins, I was recruiting Minnesotan students all the time. I mean, we could offer them more with less debt. I think if we want to recruit and retain the best Minnesotans, and this is particularly important for underrepresented minority students who do get great offers outside of the state. And we, with the diversity of our population, both for dentists and for doctors, I think it's really important that we be able to make education affordable to be able to retain these people. I should point out one thing. I was reading the charter of the University of Minnesota, and Article 12 says the goal is that if funds allowed to provide tuition at no cost for students. They said that in 1851, and so that is part of our land-grant mission. Where we can try to achieve that goal, I think that's a laudable goal, so that we can retain and recruit the best.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Dr. Jackson, and I do have a follow-up. Can you tell me how many students are admitted to the dental school versus the medical school? And what I'm trying to get at is it's a smaller population that maybe it may be needed to be targeted differently. A tuition freeze might not be enough to contain those costs because we certainly want to promote more dentists. We're really having a huge struggle. I'm mentioning it in particular because I'm seeing this in HHS. The Medicaid reimbursement rates, and I don't want to go into the weeds here, are the worst in the country. So there's already a disincentive from that vantage point to come into the profession, let alone even considering training for it. So I would encourage the university to think of other innovative ways to figure out how to bring in additional ways to contain costs and to potentially lower it, because we really need more dentists in our state and throughout our country, but particularly in Minnesota. But there's a lot of things stacked against the profession right now when it comes to not just the debt load, but also once you go to practice, you get 25 cents on a dollar. Right. So it's a bigger issue, and we certainly want to partner with the university.
Go ahead, Dean Jackson.
Madam Chair, Senator Franzen, just to answer the statistics, 230 medical students are admitted each year. I think there were 102 dental students admitted last year. But, you know, the Healthy Minnesota proposal, certainly dentistry is in there, and for scholarships, loan forgiveness. I mean, there are a number of things that were mentioned in there. And I know there are other bills addressing loan forgiveness that could certainly help in this area of dentistry.
Thank you. And members, if you'll recall, Senator Claussen's bill is a loan forgiveness program that has now been sent to Health and Human Services. So we hope, Senator Franzen, you'll be a strong advocate for it. Senator Claussen, did you have a comment?
Well, I do have a question, Madam Chair. And President Kaler, thank you for being with us today. The Umore property is within my Senate district, and over the years there have been several proposals, plans, ideas for that property. The most recent proposal now has been discontinued, shall we say. I just would appreciate if you'd comment on what you see the future of that property being. I know there's been some concern because it has been the University Agricultural Station. A lot of research that's being conducted on that property. There have been some media outlet reports about concerns about that, and if you could just comment on the future of that property.
President Kaler.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff and Senator Claussen, and I'll ask my other friend, Vice President Fitzenreiter, to come join me, and he can amplify on my remarks. But there was a plan in the mid-aughts of the 21st century to have a heavy university hand in the guiding and development of that property. 6 months ago or so, I asked a group of individuals at the university, including Vice President Fitzenreiter, to answer a series of questions about the viability of that plan and about what the directionality around that property should be. And they provided recommendations to me, which I accepted. And subsequently, the Board of Regents resolved to move in that direction. The theme really is to do two things. One, perhaps three things. One is to put in place better protection for the high-value agricultural cropland in terms of the opportunity to mine for gravel on that land. It is a very rich source of gravel, as you may know. But the third part is for the university to restrict itself in terms of horizontal development, by which I mean streets and pipes, or vertical development, by which I mean buildings, And to do horizontal development only in rare cases where the additional value would be substantial, and really to rely on the marketplace to guide us as to if and how and when we should dispose of that land for the purposes of development. So it's really a step back, a pivot, if you will, from the idea of the university as a developer. That is not, in answer to Senator Peterson's question, one of the areas I identified as part of the mission of the university. But the key is really for us to be more responsive to the market and manage the ultimate dispensation of that land in the most profitable way for the university. So, Fitz, if you could add.
Sure.
Yes, Vice President Fitzenreiter.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Richard Fitzenreiter, I'm the CFO and Treasurer at the university. Just to amplify on the President's comments, that's right. I mean, we want to move in a direction of being more market-driven and market-sensitive on this property. We are not abandoning the notion of seeing this ultimately built out as a community in the city of Rosemont. But again, as the President mentioned, that's not really in our wheelhouse. And one of the things we're doing actively now is working much closer with the city of Rosemont, with the mayor, with Kim Lindquist, the community planner, to link up better with them in terms of what direction we take down there. And I think in the near future we'll be seeing some activity going on. I'm optimistic that we'll be working closely with the city and moving that project forward. This is a long-term 40, 50-year, maybe even a 60-year process, but I think we're optimistic on the direction we're headed.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments from the committee? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. President, I was looking back on the chart that you provided with regard to state appropriations assistance and as a percentage of your overall funding mix. And it seems that since 97, correct me if I'm wrong, most sort of objective measures of the university, whether it be sort of these ranking systems or admission standards, certainly have increased significantly. You have no shortage of applicants. Have actually improved. So, and I'm not even debate, like, take the $148.2 million incremental appropriations increase, and we'll just set that to the side. I'm not even questioning that that's the right amount. What would you say to somebody who sort of questioned, well, if it's true, if the, you know, because the narrative is such that we've divested from the University of Minnesota, and therefore there's all sorts of catastrophic, you know, consequences to that. It doesn't seem to bear that itself out, though, in any objective standard outside of tuition, but tuition, of course, has increased at every institution, not only in Minnesota, but across the country at a higher rate than inflation. So what would you say to that?
So, Senator Monoff, Senator Peterson, I'd make the following comments there. One is that, in fact, we have shifted costs from the state to students. We have continued to achieve at a high level. In most cases by increased productivity and harder work by faculty. But the price we've paid, and I will perhaps ask Vice President Fitzenreiter to add, the price we've paid is student debt, which is much larger now than it was. So rather than the state providing that, students have had to borrow. We've also grown substantially. I mentioned the number of students increase, an additional campus in Rochester. Those are areas that have enabled the Rochester campus, for example, to continue to add to our delivery of mission. But I think the shift of cost from state support to student support has had the consequence of student debt. And finally, we've had to tighten belts to the point of pain. We do lose good faculty members, not only faculty of color, to other institutions who are able to compete, and particularly private institutions who are able to compete to recruit them. We've offset some of that by a very aggressive private fundraising activity in our foundation, but there certainly have been opportunities lost for the university as a consequence of budget reductions and the cost shift.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. President, I assure you that I am trying to help you in a roundabout way get away from coming back here and make doing sort of what I think is the politically popular thing to do and ask for a tuition freeze, and that's maybe not in your best interest. But I have to sort of call out the sort of double speak between what you said to Senator Ortman when she was talking about tuition with regard to whether or not it in fact was affordable, which I think, frankly, you know, no offense to anybody, I think you put to bed pretty easily. We're the second or third most affordable in the state, is what you said. If you're someone of lower means, it's practically free, and if you're of the next tier, it's amongst the most affordable institutions. And you said, what was absolutely true, which is these degrees are being conferred for the private benefit of the individual to the tune of incremental earnings potential of over $1 million in their lifetime. So it's one or the other. It can't be both. So it can't both be strategic to your interest and it's a problem, but then it's really not a problem when somebody brings it up in sort of the reverse context.
So, Chair Bonus, Senator Peterson, a couple of things on what you just said. I happen to believe there is a huge public benefit to an educated population. It's a bedrock of democracy, and I think the state of Minnesota has reaped an enormous advantage in economic return on the investment it's made in the University of Minnesota. So I think there is a very strong public good argument for increased public support of higher education. And I don't think I'm being inconsistent when I say I recognize that student debt does present a barrier to students. I just offer the context that in the scope of lifetime earnings, it is a good investment. But it is no doubt that it influences career choices that students may take. It has a very disproportionate play in decisions where people who want to go into K-12 teaching, the care of patients, which are not highly paid professions, it does make a difference in those decisions. And so, to me, the idea of renewing a state investment, which has a public good in the university, while at the same time saying to students and their families, we're going to hold your burden constant, I mean, I'm comfortably consistent in my head about those points of view.
I guess I would just say, Madam Chair, the numbers, I guess, that you present don't bear that out in terms of whether or not there's adequate applicants for those positions. Your university has no problem producing degrees and filling your roles with applicants. You have you're allowing in 10,000 and you get 45,000 applicants every year, so there is no problem with actually doing all of the things that you just suggested at the University of Minnesota. Now we could talk about it in the global context, and maybe there is, but certainly with regard to your institution there isn't. So I won't belabor the point any further. I think I've said kind of what I want to say, and I just would put it out there that I would hope you would consider in future years, you know, maybe asking for an appropriation without feeling obligated to necessarily come back and ask for a tuition freeze. You'll have my support if you do that. You may not have anybody else's support, but you'll have mine. So thanks. Thanks for entertaining.
And Senator Peterson, as I said, he'd have my support as well. So, you know, I just want to say something, though, about the nuance and the complexity of the role and responsibility we have as a higher ed committee, because we have the honor of being the committee that appropriates to the university and to champion for the university. And that's certainly something that I know in my community, people are very, very supportive. And I get tremendous amount of positive feedback from being that champion and being in a place where we can provide that. At the same time, we also have the oversight responsibility. And so we on this committee have to ask the tough questions, and we have to make sure that We listen carefully, and we ask, and we delve deeply. And so I've always appreciated and respected the conversations around this table, because I think we do have that. And so while we have talked about the wonderful article on Thursday, there was also a not-so-wonderful article that was on Saturday that was a review, or the report that the Faculty Senate completed their work on the looking at the processes and best practices around the research of human subjects. And we aren't going to hear that right now, because we have a similar report or investigation on a similar subject that Jim Nobles has undertaken that will be done mid-March. And so I want you to know that I think it's perfectly consistent to hold at the same time the honor of supporting and appropriating money for the university and the challenge and the charge to make sure that we provide oversight and make sure that we allow the forum in this committee to happen where people can explore, review. And I know that President Kaler, that you have to carry all those balls as president. And so I've appreciated your response to that report, and Vice President Herman's coming to my office and sharing his commitment to have this university be, you know, the top in every way above reproach. So didn't want to not say it in that, that was part of the public discourse, and I've gotten emails about that too. So. Yeah. Go ahead, Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, you said that very eloquently, and I, as somebody who's presenting these issues on behalf of the University of Minnesota, agree totally. We'd be remiss as legislators if we did not also take a look at the context of other issues, whether it be the issues raised by Senator Torres Ray in terms of diversity, whether it be the issues raised by Senator Peterson in terms of how we handle appropriations for the university. I don't want to have the committee, as somebody who's made this presentation, and I didn't make the presentation but kicked it off, I don't want members of the committee to suggest or to think that I don't share the concerns of the chair. We've got the responsibility to provide oversight to all parts of state government, including the University of Minnesota. But I think the chair and I agree that there's a paramount importance to the university, but it doesn't negate our responsibility to take a look at what happens with issues that don't rise to the level we'd like to see them rise at the university. We don't sweep those under the rug.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. And Senator Cohen, I've been very grateful that you were the one who's carrying this bill, because it really sends a signal to the legislature of just how important we in the Senate view the University of Minnesota and its mission. So, President Kaler.
Thank you, Chair Bonhoff. I simply wanted to add that we're taking this report, and we look forward to the legislative auditor's report very seriously. But I would frame that we asked this external panel to come and tell us what it would take for our programs to be above reproach, the absolute best in the world. And they found areas that we clearly can improve and offered a series of recommendations. But they also identified an encounter with a large number of people at the University of Minnesota who are dedicated to the well-being of our research enterprise. And we will take these two reports together. I will charge Vice President Herman and Vice President Jackson with task force to return within 60 days our action steps to, in fact, create a program that's above reproach.
Thank you very much, President Kaler. Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair,
Senator Ortman.
I would just like to say I agree with you and Senator Cohen, too, that the Higher Ed Committee does have a set of responsibilities for oversight for the University of Minnesota. And as elected representatives, we are asked to go back to our communities and confirm that the University of Minnesota is fulfilling its mission. I get questions about that all the time from constituents. Constituents whose children graduate from our very fine high schools but can't get admitted into the University of Minnesota, or folks that can't afford the tuition. And so that is part of our responsibility. I'm not here to criticize the University of Minnesota. I am here to support the University of Minnesota and also to continue to remind the University of Minnesota representatives of its core mission. That is our role and responsibility in this committee. So I'm a big fan of the University of Minnesota, but I also think that is my responsibility. We see regent candidates very infrequently. We've just seen many of them, and every time I meet with one, I also, again, remind them of that core mission to make sure that the university is affordable and accessible. And I know you're committed to that as well. So for me, this is an opportunity to remind folks that there are a lot of Minnesotans that want you to continue with that core mission.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Cohen.
Let me just make one other comment. And this isn't meant to be some type of pandering to a constituent seated to my right. East Cliff is actually in my district. All the presidents are my constituents. But I've had a chance, and this is by, unfortunately, virtue of being a relatively senior member of the legislature. My first term in the House, which was quite a while ago, I served on what was the old higher ed policy division. And I wasn't that far out of college at that point. And we asked some pretty significant questions of the then president, President McGraw. And I've seen the presidents over the years try to tackle these kinds of issues at a campus that's a large, very difficult to govern campus. And my comment relative to President Kaler, and I've seen this with the other presidents as well, but I think particularly with President Kaler, is he's been a pretty tough administrator at the university relative to some of these issues. And the issues raised around this committee table, issues raised by other members of the Senate. And I don't want to get into the details of last year, Madam Chair, when we had this meeting relative to regenerative medicine. And there was a question raised by one of the House conferees, my then counterpart, Representative Carlson. And I told Representative Carlson afterwards, and he asked a question that was very critical to the university and in this private meeting. And I told him afterwards, I said, I think you just kind of played into the hands of President Kaler. He's going to take that opportunity to go back to the university and tell the variety of deans, here's what we're doing from now on, based on what I heard from the then chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. So I think President Kaler has, from my experience, taken these kinds of concerns and issues extremely seriously.
Thank you, Senator Cohen.
And it's not just because he's a constituent.
And Senator Cohen, I too appreciate President Kaler, how no matter what the question is, whether you call on your colleagues to come and answer details, you actually have an amazing grasp of every area of your university. And so I presume that's your engineering training and your attention to detail, but it is noted and greatly appreciated, and we really appreciate you being here with us today and making sure we all understand the very real connection between our ability to thrive economically, to play a role in feeding our planet, and the University of Minnesota, because you were the exact right CEO to be here with us today.
Thank you very much. It is a very real connection. Thank
yes. you. So, no further comments and questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion, and Senator Cohen, fight for a big target. And with that, committee is adjourned.